Good evening to one and all. I'm glad you are with me in person tonight. We are going to do tonight, we're going to study one of the few things that de Vilna Gaon actually wrote with the intention for others to read, as opposed to just the notes, as Rav Chaim Volozhiner said, many of the notes were meant for himself and not necessarily for public consumption. So tonight, we are going to read a letter that we mentioned in the past that de Vilna Gaon wrote to his family while en route to Israel for the Aliyah, which of course he was unsuccessful in making. And I'd like to give as much time to studying the letter, because the holy words of de Vilna Gaon are worthy of their own study and interpretation. But before we get there, I wanted to round out some of the historical context in which the Vilna Gaon's Aliyah did or did not happen, primarily because I want to share with you very briefly a remarkable theory from a scholar in Israel named Ari Morgenstern, who has a book. You can see the cover of it on page 2, The Gaon of Vilna and His Messianic Vision. I have the book here. You know, when sometimes you fold down a page in a book because you want to remember what the author says, and then you start folding every single page. So it's pretty, the second half of this book is totally folded over at this point. Professor Morgenstern, who has done very interesting research and very thorough, he's the Indiana Jones of the Vilna Gaon's life. And I'll give you a couple of examples of it in a minute. He has an absolutely remarkable theory. I'm just not equipped to determine if the theory is too exaggerated or perfect. It sounds really perfect to me, but I'm no scholar. And it could be. It could be the most magnificent theory about the Vilna Gaon. If it is, it's an incredible, incredible story. He believes that it is. He's very confident, in fact, that it is. I would take it maybe with a grain of salt, with all due respect. But it's up to you, I guess, to decide. Anybody who wants to read the book is more than welcome to borrow it or read it.
Where's the teaching where he studied?
I don't know. We do. Dr. Morgenstern is a senior fellow at the Shalem Center in Yerushalayim. He has a PhD in Jewish history from Hebrew U. And his research specialties include messianic movements in the 18th and 19th centuries, hence our conversation. He also has a couple of lectures. If your Hebrew is good enough, your modern Hebrew is good enough, he has a couple of lectures about the Vilna Gaon that are hours long that you could watch on YouTube if you want to do that version as well or in addition. So here's the basic question. The Vilna Gaon definitely wanted to make Aliyah. How do we know the Vilna Gaon wanted to make Aliyah? Because he told his family, I'm making Aliyah. And he left, right? There's no question about it. It's a historical fact that the Vilna Gaon left his family behind at some point. Not exactly clear exactly when that happened, but he did. He told them he did. He wrote them a letter, which we're going to study tonight, in which he said, maybe we'll see each other again. Not the most comforting thing to hear from your father, right? And if we see each other again, it'll be in the land of Israel. That we know for sure. The other thing that we know for sure is, despite the Vilna Gaon's interest in making Aliyah and moving to Israel, not even close. You remember from the children, who we'll talk about in a second, their hakdama to the Shulchan Aruch. So they say that, well, this will all come full circle in a minute. There were two things that our father didn't do that we couldn't figure out why he never did. Why didn't he write a code of Jewish law that was better than the Shulchan Aruch? And why did he not go to Israel? And remember, because all of the details here now are a little bit more significant. So they said, well, we asked him all the time and he avoided us. And then finally we pushed and we pushed and we pushed and we pushed. And he said, it wasn't Menashe Mayim. Hashem didn't want it to be. So tonight, with Morgenstern's theory, we'll add a little bit of color to that conversation. We'll talk about that in a second. It's not perfectly clear. The challenge is the letter that we're going to read tonight was published in or sent from Königsberg, not from home, which is interesting. And it wasn't officially published until many years after the Vilna Gaon passed away, meaning the family had it, but it wasn't published until later. So the dating of the letter itself does not prove when the Vilna Gaon exactly wrote it, but Morgenstern has his theory for an exact date, and we'll get to it. Morgenstern has another big problem with the Vilna Gaon story. Now, I don't know if you're like me and you don't spend any time in Europe, so it's very hard to know, you know, where places are and what direction you're supposed to be headed. So it's a pretty straightforward question. If you want to move from Vilna to Yerushalayim, how do you get there? So you have to Google map it, right? That's what I did on page 2. And I show all my work in this year. There's no secrets here, right? I think, historically, if you want to go from Vilna to Yerushalayim, you basically go south. You kind of go southeast. The most efficient way, the scholars say, and it looks kind of true on the map, is you just go southeast from Vilna through Belarus, through Ukraine. Eventually, you make your way to the Black Sea. You hop on a boat. You cross the Black Sea going south. Eventually, you make it to one of these large port cities in Turkey. You travel south through Turkey, through Syria, through Lebanon. Mazel tov, you have arrived in the land of Israel. The Vilna Gaon did not make it to Israel. Where did he go? As my map shows you very clearly, how many hours? 1,090. I wanted to know, not by car, how by foot, how long would it take? So it'd take a lot. I guess he had a horse and buggy or something. The Vilna Gaon does not go there. He goes to The Hague and he goes to Amsterdam. Now, you don't have to be a brilliant cartographer to figure this one out. You could just look at my map. Wrong direction. Now, this is a genius. This is the genius of geniuses. He does not need to ask for directions. What is the Vilna Gaon doing? He says to his family, I'm going to make Aliyah, and he travels west. And he goes to The Hague, and he goes to Amsterdam. There's all these stories. It's not for me to determine whether these stories are historically accurate or apocryphal and legendary. The houses, the people that Vilna Gaon stayed with, and he met this person who had this beautiful relationship with his wife. There's a whole story. But where does that story take place? In Amsterdam, because that's where the Vilna Gaon was en route to Eretz Yisrael. I have another question for you. The Vilna Gaon didn't make it to Israel. Why not? Is it doable? We're going to assume that his aliyah, his attempted travels to Israel, took place in his 50s. Okay, just trust me on that fact for now. So he's physically able, even if he spends his whole life in the Beis Medrash and he doesn't really sleep and he washes down some wet bread, that's all that he participates in terms of Gashmias. Is he physically capable of making the trip? Is it a safe trip? All of the Vilna Gaon's Talmidim are so inspired by their Rebbe's failed trip to Aliyah that they all just moved to Israel, every single one of them. Now they get stuck in pandemics and epidemics and captivity and all this other stuff, but they all moved to Israel, no problem. So how does he not make it? I don't know. I assume they didn't take the same route. They probably wouldn't have made it. Maybe. So I don't know. It's all possible. Yeah. Marty's been researching my competition. Okay. Okay. This is two different versions. I don't know. So Morgenstern is bothered by all these problems, and he's trying to figure out where the grub was going and why. And then he does, he tries to answer the next question, which is when exactly did the Grah travel? Now, what's interesting is this wasn't so long ago. This is 250 years ago. And lots of the Jewish communities kept records of everything that they did. right? The great records, let's say in Amsterdam, the Spanish Portuguese community have records of everything. Two rabbis in the shul will do this another year, and they're fighting over who gets to give the sermon in Parshas Shoftim and who gets to give the sermon in Parshas Kisetze. It's all there, it down to the last drop. Everything's in the record. So Morgenstern goes fishing around, and lo and behold, he finds references to gifts that the Vilna Gaon received in support of his trip to Israel in The Hague. In fact, what it basically is what we call shliach mitzvah money, because the Gross trip is fully funded. He has money. The Talmidim talk about when the Vilna Gaon came back, one of his midas chasidus was that he returns back all the money that he was given by all of the people who helped him pay for his aliyah. So his trip is fully funded. He goes to The Hague. The Hague has a list of all of the Jewish community of The Hague maintained a list of all the people it gave money to support their mission to move to the land of Israel. And in the very same year of 1778, in the spring, they have two records on that list, money that was given to the Chida and money that was given to the Vilna Gaon. So we know that he was there. We know that he gave them some money. Working back a little bit, he was there on his way to Eretz Yisrael. I believe he made a successful trip of Aliyah, right? The Chida comes back. That's correct. But he does make it to, he goes come back and forth and back and forth. And a lot of the listings in The Hague and other places are money that Israelis were coming back to fundraise for and bringing back with them. But this is first time Aliyah contributions from the Jewish community. 3 years earlier, in 1775, Morgenstern shows us a letter that was written by the Vilna Gaon and his brother to the chief rabbi of Amsterdam, who was married into the Gruz family, through marriage. They were related through marriage. And in the letter, the Gruz and his brother are asking their relative through marriage if the Jewish community in Amsterdam in their library has manuscripts that the Vilna Gaon does not have in his own library. And this gets Morgenstern's wheels turning, because what did the Vilna Gaon tell his students? Everybody remember? He knows everything in Judaism, except for two facts in the Zohar that he has not yet figured out. And who is he writing to about the books that he does not understand in the Zohar? His relative through marriage, who happens to live in Amsterdam. Morgenstern suggests, two other facts. In the beginning of 1778, this all happens, his trip to, according to Morgenstern's records, the trips to The Hague and Amsterdam are taking place in this early summer of 1778. Right at the beginning of the year, two facts are recorded in the records of the town of Vilna itself. In January of 1778, the Vilna Gaon's brother-in-law, meaning the Vilna Gaon's wife's sister's husband, whose name was Leib, sells one of his storefronts, sells one of his businesses to Eliyahu of Vilna, to his brother-in-law. And the language that he uses is bo hu v'ishto, v'uhab, which means he's selling it to his brother-in-law because the men are allowed to purchase the properties, with the intention that the wife will run the business, meaning he's really selling a business to his wife's sister, but the brother-in-law has to sign on in order for the transaction to be valid. And the second transaction that happens is in February of 1778, a month later, when the Vilna Gaon makes not one, but two chasanas, and he marries off both of his young boys, Aryeh and Yehuda Leib, who later write the introduction to Shulchan Aruch about their father, children from the Vilna Gaon's second marriage, and he marries them off. How old are they? Like very young, like 13 and 10, arranged marriages. What Morgenstern says, what's the Vilna Gaon doing? What's he doing? He's setting everything up so he can leave. He marries off the boys. He gives his wife a business to run, which is interesting because he didn't, there was no money. How did they stay financially? How were they funded? The community was paying him to sit and learn, but he closed up shop. He's leaving. There is no stipend for someone who leaves. So he arranges that there should be a business for his wife, for by which he can make some parnasa. He makes sure that the boys, nobody's going with him, as far maybe a student or something, nobody. Okay. He arranges for marriages. This is all Morgan Stern's reconstructed theory. He has all the documents to prove it. That's what he says. Both of the boys are now in arranged marriages that either took place or will take place in the future. And his wife is set up financially with a business to keep her afloat. And then he travels in the direction of The Hague, where he receives some money for his aliyah, and Amsterdam, where he is searching for manuscripts to answer questions in the Zohar that he has not solved for himself. Parenthetically, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit another week. The Vilna Gaon has one friend, kind of friend, colleague. Who's the Vilna Gaon's colleague and friend? The Dubna Maggid. It's an interesting guy. I believe I looked it up. I think the Dubna Maggid was born in 1740, which means he's 20 years younger than the Vilna Gaon. He obviously doesn't live in Vilna. They have this funny relationship. The legendary story is that whenever the Dubna Maggid would visit the Vilna Gaon would ask him to give him mussar. It's hard to give mussar to somebody who learns 22 hours a day. Like, what are you supposed to say to him? And I think the legend goes that the Dubna Maggid said, it's so easy to be such a chassid if you never open the door for anybody. And he cried and cried and cried, but didn't change his conduct, obviously. The reason that this is interesting is because there are letters between the Vilna Gaon and the Dubna Maggid. And in one of those letters from 1791, that's the math, from 1791, the Vilna Gaon says to the Dubna Maggid, it's been such a long time, we haven't seen each other in at least 13 years since you came to the Chasanas. So another record of the fact that 1778, right before he left, he married off the boys. Now, Morgan Stern shows that, as we know, at many different points in Jewish history, different mystics and scholars and philosophers and Talmudists all tried to come up with the definitive answer to the most important question in Judaism, which is, when is Mashiach coming, right? Everybody wants to know, when is Mashiach coming? Now, he proves, not my expertise, he proves that the common understanding, based on certain very specific calculations, Vilna Gaon had his own version, but it's really not something that he came up with, was that people believed that what we call, let's say, Reshit Smichat Geulatenu, was in the works for 1781. Now, you laugh, who can pinpoint such a number? But history shows that Jews have been guessing throughout the centuries when exactly they thought Mashiach was coming. And in the early 18th century, everybody thought that the second half of this century, around the 1780s, 1781, they thought Mashiach was probably going to come. That's what they thought, right? That is probably above my pay grade. But that was the calculation that they came up with. This year is talked about. Many people were making aliyah exactly at the same time, including the Chidah, thinking they wanted to be in the right place at the right time. And it related to their belief in Messianism. I think there's a story of the Vilna Gaon. I don't remember where the story is originally recorded, but the Vilna Gaon's, It's based on a calculation of the centuries of the world according to the Jewish calendar, meaning we find ourselves in 5783, and they were 250 years before, so they were in the 5500s, right? The second half of the sixth century. So they were six millennia. Thank you. They were working off the assumption that at the turn of the second half of the sixth millennium, Mashiach was going to come. So some have pointed out the following. The Vilna Gaon has a famous statement that every single person's name is found in the Chumash. You just have to know where your name is. That's what he told people. So someone said to him, this is kind of the silly question. You shouldn't ask the Gra. Oh yeah, where's your name found in the Chumash? So the Gra said, Evan Shlema Vatzedek Yalach. That's my name. Right? Because he's Eliyahu ben Shlomo. Evan Shlema, get it? Right? Evan Shlema. So the argument that they make is that each millennium is one volume of the Chumash. And as the Chumash comes to fruition, Mashiach comes to fruition. And the Vilna Gaon found his name in the second half of Sefer Dvarim because he saw himself living in the era right before Mashiach came. Nonetheless, the Vilna Gaon, according to Morgenstern, believes that Mashiach is coming very soon. Why does he need to be in Israel when Mashiach comes? No. How does Mashiach come? Well, does he come on his own? Or do we bring him? So the Vilna Gaon is of the opinion, and we can see this in a number of different places, that in fact, the way Mashiach will come is if we master the study of Torah. If you can figure out everything that the Torah has hidden within it, it sounds a little Da Vinci Code-like. If you figure the whole thing out, Mashiach will come. And he points out, this is on page 3, 2 pages of Morgenstern's book I wanted to show you. So Morgenstern points out that this is a major contrast between the Vilna Gaon and the Hasidim that he was beginning to be at war with. Okay, the Hasidim had a totally different attitude about how exactly Mashiach would come. This is a quote from the Gaon at the top of page 360. Every unresolved issue is a shell and emanates from a mass multitude that intermingled with the Israelites. This is how unresolved issues insinuated themselves into halacha. The answer to the unresolved issues is the repair of the shell. Moses was inarticulate. He taught the halacha in an obstructed way, and Aaron interpreted it. So it will be in the future. Today, Moses is inarticulate in exile, since now there is no clear halacha in one location. In other words, the new Torah, the one that will be revealed, will not be a different Torah, heaven forbid, but rather one in which everything will be perfectly clear, unlike the one that exists today. In other words, what the Vilna Gaon believed, which is part of how what his whole dedicated life of scholarship was all about, was that there were mistakes or ambiguities in our understanding of Torah that are the reason why Mashiach cannot come. And our mission is to clarify all of those uncertainties, ambiguities, and misunderstandings in Torah tradition. And when we get it right, Mashiach will appear. Elsewhere, he repeated the idea that the process would culminate with the revelation and elucidation of the original laws of Moses. At the end of the exile, in the footsteps of Mashiach, the tree of life, the law of Moses, will be revealed. And who at the end of days will elucidate the truth and secrets of the law of Moses? It will be no overestimate to say, as we've showed above, the task at hand is in fact the divine mission of revealing the secrets of Torah imposed by the Vilna Gaon on himself. In other words, he believes that if he can figure it out, Mashiach will come. Yisrael Lifshkov mentions his perspective of the Gaon about the sequence of actions that must precede the redemption. His remarks in the preface to Pada Shulchan indicate that within the entirety of Torah literature, the Gaon of Vilna had failed to resolve only two issues in Zohar. It's not just a fun piece of trivia that there were only two things he didn't understand. He thought there were two ideas in Judaism that were preventing him from bringing Mashiach. Had the Gaon resolved these issues, he would have brought the sorting process to its end, and the path to Mashiach's arrival would have been ready for use. Thus, Yisrael Lifshkov described the ceremony that the Gaon conducted after completing his commentary on Shir HaShirim, which I believe I mentioned this before. He gave an order to close his room. The windows were closed and great many candles were lit. He lifted his eyes heavenward with immense devotion, uttering blessings and expressing gratitude to his great name for having given him the privilege of attaining the light of the entire Torah inside of out. Yisrael Lifshkov says, here is what he said. All the sciences are dependent on our holy Torah and are included in it. He knew them through and through and mentioned them, the science of algebra, triangles, geometry, music, and he praised them effusively. Then he said that most of the Torah cantillation, the secret of the songs of the Levim, the secrets of Tikkuni HaZohar cannot be known unless one knows music. He explained the nature of all the sciences and said that he had grasped them thoroughly, including the science of witchcraft, which the Sanhedrin and the Tanayim knew. Afterwards, the Gaon said that with God's assistance, he had attained thorough knowledge of the entire Torah as given at Sinai. Remember, the Gaon does not see himself as limited by the time in which he lives. He found difficulty only two serious issues in the esoterics of Torah and the Zohar. If he knew someone who knew them, he would go to him on foot and wait with this for the Mashiach for our vindication. So Morgenstern is of the opinion that that is exactly what the Vilna Gaon was doing in Amsterdam. He was seeking Pirushim on the Zohar, writings of Rav Chaim Vital, etc., that he believed were essential to him understanding the very few things about Judaism he did not. And what happens? Just to cut to the chase, and then I'll take the questions. We have letters that he wrote to people in Amsterdam looking for books. And then we have evidence that he wound up in Amsterdam on his way to Israel. No, he's talking about manuscripts of Chaim Vital that are, you know, deceased 175 years before him, but he doesn't have the books. And he thinks that he must be missing something in order to perfect. You see, with the way the Vilna Gaon works, sometimes students work this way in school, but for you, it's considered obnoxious. For him, it's considered to be genius. If you look at something and it doesn't make sense, what do you say about it? It's wrong, right? If you can't figure out a math problem and you do the steps exactly the way your teacher taught you to do it, and the numbers don't come out the same way as the calculator, so something's wrong with the problem, when in fact, there's something wrong with you. The Vilna Gaon is of the opinion that there are tiny little mistakes, ambiguities, lackings in Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh, things that because Moshe Rabbeinu was a Kfad Peh, so it wasn't perfectly clear, things in the Zohar that were misunderstood. And if he could just reconstruct, oh, and there's only a few things he doesn't understand. So he knows exactly to pinpoint what he needs to correct in order for Torah to be perfected. And if Torah is perfected, Mashiach is coming. The problem is, yeah, Jeff. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point. I don't know. The question, Jeff is asking a very litvish question about a very mystical concept, which is, what exactly does it take for Mashiach to come once you personally have perfected all of Torah? Let's say Jeff Kronish and his chevra at the Daf Yomi figured out all of Shas. They perfected it without a crumb missing. So that's great, but what percentage of our membership comes to the DAF? So you gotta send an email to the whole membership, and only 26% of our members click through on our emails. I know that, because that's what it says on the website. And that doesn't even get it to all of Riverdale. So at what point does Mashiach come? Just because one person figured it out? Somebody whose notes are unreadable to the average citizen? And that's a very important point, because the Vilna Gaon believes at this stage, according to Morgan Stern, I think he might be right, that he can bring Mashiach on his own. Now, look at page 386. No. Don't conflate movements. The Vilna Gaon does not think he is Mashiach. He believes that redemption is brought through engagement in Torah study, and he's the best at Torah study. Hold on. It seems like he's looking not for people, he's looking for books. That's what they say. Doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. That's exactly right. It doesn't hurt. Now, 386, so skipping a few pages in Morgenstern, you got to read Morgenstern's whole theory for yourself if you want to believe it. Top of 386. The Gaon of Vilna, undoubtedly cognizant of his unique qualities, apparently reached the conclusion that heaven was withholding his permission to complete all the revelation of the secrets of Torah. So what does the Vilna Gaon mean when he says to his kids, when they push him, why didn't you go? He said, Hashem wouldn't let me. What does he mean? He means he's inches away from having it all figured out. And obviously Hashem doesn't want him to figure it all out. Otherwise he would have found the books he was missing. He would have figured things out. After all, his ability to fully decipher all the secrets of Torah, apart from the last two, constituted an accomplishment unequaled by anyone in recent generations. Therefore, he construed the barrier of the two issues as a heaven-sent impediment that had been placed in his path, as if to convey that this was not the way to hasten the redemption. The redemption would be fulfilled neither by means of supremely focused effort never to recur, nor by the mystic action, nor by any action that might be undertaken by one individual. This is my favorite line in the whole book. All of the Vilna Gaon's assumptions in the fact that he can bring Mashiach are what? He believes that you can bring Mashiach through Talmud Torah, which is really fascinating. He believes that the mystical study of Torah will bring about the Mashiach. And he also believes that one person can figure out the whole thing and bring Mashiach for everybody. But he can't figure it out. Can you imagine? Around September 1778, the Gaon apparently retraced his steps with an acute sense of failure, having been impeded by the supreme authority. Right? The only way he can explain how close he got and still be unsuccessful was that that's what Hashem wanted. The experience marked a turning point in his way of life. 1778, the Gra is 58 years old. This is the ultimate rabbinic midlife crisis, right? That's what happens here. His orientation from then on was different from everything that had preceded it. Until then, the Gaon of Vilna had doggedly believed in a sequential path to the hastening of redemption, revealing the secrets of the Torah, concluding the sorting process, writing a halacha as systemic and clear as when given at Sinai. He also believed that he, with his God-given spiritual gift, was the person who was meant and able to fulfill this enterprise. He focused all his intellectual and spiritual powers on this goal, isolating himself and distancing himself from all human surroundings, including members of his family. He even refrained from taking on disciples, lest they slow his personal progress. Everything that we've learned over the last 3 weeks is being reformulated by Morgenstern into one remarkable grand theory. Everything that DeGraw is doing in the first half, if you will, of his life is his belief that he can bring Mashiach on his own and everybody else is getting in the way. His famous epistle, Alim Letrufa, which he sent in the midst of this travel, makes no reference to the existence of disciples because until that point, he had no disciples in the conventional sense of the term. So you're asking all along, you know, why does he have no students? Why doesn't he learn with anybody else? Why doesn't he go to sleep at night? Because he's on to something, right? He's close, or at least he believes that he's close. And in order for him, remember what his students asked him all these questions. Oh, you don't talk to the Maggid, but Rav Yosef Karo talked to the Maggid. Remember the two of them, 200 years apart, always seem to be in competition with one another. And he says to his children, yeah, Rav Yosef Karo spoke to a Maggid, but where was he? Eretz Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon, according to Morgenstern, it is a fantastic theory, take it or leave it. He believes that the Vilna Gaon intends to perfect Torah on his way to Israel. And when he arrives in Eretz Yisrael with Torah fully understood, Mashiach has to come. The problem is, he goes on that route, believing that the answers to his last two problems, if only we knew what they were, the last two problems he has should be found in The Hague or probably in Amsterdam. And he gets there, and for whatever reason, he cannot find them. And so the Vilna Gaon has a unique problem, which is it doesn't matter how close you get if you fail. So it doesn't matter that he knew 98% of Torah as he understood it. He doesn't have enough material that he can go to Israel with because he's not done. He believes he will outdo Rav Yosef Karo, but he's not successful. And he does not believe he can get it there. Why? I have no idea. He believes he needs to walk into Israel knowing every single piece of Torah that there is. And if he does, redemption is imminent. And because he cannot solve the problems with his intellectual honesty, he admits that there are elements of Torah which he simply cannot solve. He just turns around and goes home. And then, this is why I think Morgenstern is fantastic, totally changes his approach for the rest of his life. So from 1778 until 1796, when the Vilna Gaon passes away, the last 18 years of his life, he is in a certain sense, a different person. He is engaged in the community. What is his number one activity during those 18 years? We studied it last week. He's fighting Hasidim because what does he believe? Fundamentally, they're connected to Sabbateanism. They have a wrong attitude about what redemption is. He thinks he understands redemption. He's just not able to do it on his own. If he can't do it on his own, what's he going to do? He's going to teach Torah to people that are capable of learning with him. There's going to be an intense focus on the mitzvos atzluyos baaretz, things that are connected to the land of Israel. And then he's going to inspire his students to move en masse to the land of Israel and try and produce redemption a different way. Is Professor Morgenstern correct? I don't know, but you could read the book for yourself. You can evaluate the sources. It makes a very compelling argument for taking a lot of the conversations, the recorded memories of the Vilna Gaon, and puts them all into one cohesive unit in which we can understand that he was not just an eccentric person who was obsessed with Torah, but he was someone who was obsessed with Torah because he thought that he had a redemptive capability. And it's in 1778 when he realizes it's not going to come true. Okay, Rivka. The book is modern. It's very recent. I believe he is 2006. It's hard to say. I mean, I didn't read a lot about in general, about the Gruz attitude about Mashiach and redemptive process and Aliyah. So I'm not really equipped to to evaluate it as well as I would like. I'm not sure how well accepted it is. My sense is that in Israel, he's a very well-respected scholar and his work on the Vilna Gaon has been well-received, but that's as much as I could say. Like, right, again, you know, I don't believe he thinks he is Mashiach, but I believe that he has a tangible method by which redemption can be made possible. Yeah, let's get around. Yonina? Yeah, so we will talk about that, I think, in a coming week. I think we should do it, about some of his writings about Mashiach too, and see how they square with this. Again, this is a particular theory about a particular stage of his life and about a particular journey. I think there's some speculation here, but it's an interesting argument. Let's work back to front. Zvi? I don't know. Good question. How did the Vilna Gaon come up with this belief that a full understanding of Torah would bring about Mashiach? It seems to be, to me, that the Vilna Gaon has an instinct, which is, if you look at something that is like moderately imperfect and you feel an itch to fix it, like, you know, it has a little smudge and you just have to, you know, one of your kids, like a little chocolate on the, you have to get it. I feel like that's how he looks at Judaism to a certain extent. There are mistakes in it, and he saw it as his life's work to correct them. And he maybe. Remember that because it is common understanding in this moment that Mashiach is imminent, right? The Vilna Gaon, according to Professor Morgenstern, and this, I think, is factual, is that people believed Mashiach was coming. They always did. Hopefully we still do. They believed Mashiach was right around the corner. So the question was not, will Mashiach come, but what will the impetus for his arrival be? And that's his theory. Donald.
Theory seems to believe his going to Israel without these two remaining pieces to the divine puzzle will not bring, he will not find it out there, right? Even though he has the utmost respect for Rabbi Yosef Karo,
yeah,
and his meeting the Magid there, and yet he thinks all of his soon to be disciples at this turn of his life need to go there.
So, Morgenstern's assumption is that the Vilna Gaon does not, this is a second model. And he only tries model number two when model number one fails.
Why would he try it with himself?
I don't know.
In other words, he tries model one. Model one is Torah in Galus and then go.
Good question.
Model two is go to Israel.
Yes. That's correct.
It's now like a fundamental thing that you can't hasten the Gula.
Again, he doesn't think he's hastening the Gula. He thinks he has perfect timing.
No, but I'm saying,
what's the expression? Perfection is the enemy of the good. So maybe.
But he's like,
maybe.
I'm not going to sleep because, like I said, I'm on to something.
He's on to it. Yeah. I don't know. I can only present it as it is. I missed one hand. Did somebody else have a hand up that I didn't get to? Sharon? Oh, so this was my, thank you. So I think this is a point that all the Zionists in the room, with all due respect, last week we had a lot of Hasidim in the room, this week we have a lot of Zionists. So with all due respect, there's a problem here, which is the Vilna Gaon loves Israel. He loves Israel. There's only one thing he loves more than Israel, and that's Torah, right? And the problem is, you know, even the Vilna Gaon can't invent primary sources. He needs them. So he was under the impression that the best libraries of the day had the materials that he needed. That's Morgenstern's belief. He's writing to Amsterdam saying there's books here and I need them. There are theories that when the Vilna Gaon was younger, we know he left his family at earlier stages to wander around Europe. He's photographic memory, memorizing all these things in the libraries where he can find them. That I have no idea, but it's pretty clear that he's going to Amsterdam to research. He's on sabbatical and he just can't finish his dissertation, right?
Historically, that's probably true.
There's nothing in Israel. That was my point, no, right? There's nothing there.
He's also very good in Western Europe. They just finished both places.
Amsterdam's the best place to be. The wealthiest Jews with the best books. No question about it. Makes a lot of sense. Okay, now here's what you need to do. I obviously have very terrible time management. The only people who benefit from the length of these classes are people who are here for 9:30 tomorrow. Otherwise, it is what it is. I admit it. Okay, now you have to make a decision, okay? I felt like it was important to share this theory with you because you have to understand the basics. The basics are that the Vilna Gaon travels west instead of going south. And then after traveling the wrong direction for a while, he turns around. Now just imagine, this is totally typical for the Vilna Gaon, because his kids say this. And he comes back home after telling them he may never see them again. And they say, Dad, where were you? And what does he say? I don't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to talk about it, right? They push him. Eventually he says, you know, that's not what Hashem wanted for me. There's no conversation. The Vilna Gaon just comes back. So it's important to understand that this is perhaps one of the most significant efforts that the Vilna Gaon made in his life. It might be the culmination of all the efforts of the first half of his life, if Professor Morgenstern is correct. And then it's over. In this window of time, the Vilna Gaon has left his family. Let's assume it's 1778, okay? Spring of 1778. While he's away from his family, not before he left, he realizes that there are some things he probably should have told them because his wife and children and sons-in-law and mother, you'll see in the letter in a minute, he refers to his mother as living and to his mother as a widow, meaning his father has already passed away. There's things he probably should have told them before he left, but he's not that kind of person. So he writes it and he sends it back. How do you read Igeres Hagra? You could buy the art scroll version with the leather cover and the gold embroidered letters and the footnotes. I didn't do that, by the way. I'm telling you, I probably should have, but I don't want to make fun of it. I just read the letter as is. But I can tell you that if you look on the internet, if you Google Igeres Hagra, you could go to a Musser Shmooze in a Haredi community where there's 19 sessions of Musser based on this book, exactly like the Mesillas Yesharim. There are editions of this letter that are published in the same volume as Igeres Ramban, because I don't know, the Ramban wrote a letter and the Gra wrote a letter, and you should probably read them and you should daven them up and you should chazer them and there should be a bechina and and you should know it. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that approach. In fact, some might say that is the right approach to studying this letter. The alternative is to do what we're about to do for the next 20 minutes, which is, you know a little bit about the Vilna Gaon, you know the circumstances that he was in, and until this point in his 50s, you know more or less the kind of life he was leading. So now, I've been waiting to ask this question since I thought this is the perfect question to ask. If you were the Vilna Gaon and you knew everything about the Vilna Gaon's life, and you were a couple towns over on your way to Eretz Yisrael via Amsterdam, and you wrote to your wife and kids, what would you tell them? What's that? What's the Wi-Fi password? Right, exactly. What's he going to tell them? Does he tell them he's coming back? No. What would you tell him? Anybody want to make a suggestion? What? Well, you might. What? Maybe we're not even up to that yet, right? Maybe tell them how the trip is going. Okay. What? So it's really interesting. It's impossible. Now, Marty and I were debating this the other day. This letter is so readable and so accessible, I'm convinced it's a forgery. I don't really mean that, but Marty says, this, and Marty disagrees with me, Marty says, the Vilna Gaon was so much smarter than you that he was able to write for different audiences. Maybe. This is a shockingly, shockingly readable letter. And I believe that it is validated as an authentic letter sent by the Vilna Gaon to his wife, children-in-law, and mom. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Hundreds of years before. Yeah. Just because they're in the same volume of a book, don't get confused. Okay. So I took an, So I took an online version of this, which I'm happy to share fully, that has footnotes and stuff, and I cut and pasted without the footnote so I could get it onto three pages. I'm going to skip to as many of the highlights as I can in 20 minutes or so to give it the attention that it deserves. It is readable, even without the art scroll and the English and the footnotes. You could just read it, which is amazing. Okay, so this is page Aleph. What? I believe it was written in Hebrew. That's a good point, but I believe he wrote it in Hebrew. That's my working assumption, okay? There's also two different versions of it. I don't know the history of why there's two different gersos of the letter. I don't understand. So on page five, again, this is cut and paste, but the whole letter is here, page five, six, and seven. Okay, let's start in the first paragraph. Basi Levakesh, so the second paragraph on the top right column, okay? Basi Levakesh Meitchem. I want to ask you a favor. Shelo Titzaru Klal V'Klal Ben Asiel Eretz Yisrael. First of all, don't stress out. Kemoshev tichu li amitis, like you promised me. Vegam lo tidagu, and don't worry. Hine anashim nosim al kama shanim b'shtol mamon umanichem nishosein. This is historically true. People all the time, they say to their wives, I have a business opportunity in India. I'll be back in 7 months. And why are they doing it? For money. Vegam heim na v'nad b'choser kol ve'ani nosel eretz hakadosha she'akol mitzapim lirosa. I'm not going to get rich in some other country. I'm going to Israel. Chemdas kol Yisrael, v'chemdas Hashem Yisbarachu, kol ha'olyonu v'tachtonim tshukasam eleha. By the way, this is why there's a sense of that precursor to Zionism in the language of the Vilna Gaon, because he is incredibly passionate and flowery and articulate about it. V'ani nosea b'shalom baruch Hashem, v'gam ad yodat shehinachti yaladi shalibi homa aleihem, V'kol sifrei hayikarim, v'ayisi kiger ba'aretz acheres v'hinachti akol. You know how much I love Israel? I left my kids behind. I left my svarim. Throughout this letter, by the way, I'm not sure if svarim means like his favorite books, you know, meaning his Gemaras and his Ramban, or it means what? His own notes, right? I have a suspicion that it means that, but I don't know for sure. V'yadua. Kikol ha'olam hazeh ha'kol hevel, v'kol ha'sha'ashu'em ha'kol kela. V'oila rod v'machar hevel she'in ba'moro, v'al tekanei ba'osher, ki yesh osher shamur le'valav l'raso. Now, anybody who's familiar with the book of Ecclesiastes, you were awake on Shabbos Chol Hamoed, there's a lot of Koheles here. What's he saying? People leave their families for a lot more shallow things than I've left you for. And what? To get rich? What's money? Money is nothing. I'm leaving you for a good thing. What's he really leaving for? To bring Mashiach, right? He's leading for Eretz Yisrael. He quotes pasuk after pasuk after pasuk from Koheles in the next two paragraphs. Last paragraph on the first column. V'lachein, ani mashircha, shetargil atzmicha b'chol hayoser, leishev yechidi. My personal advice is you should try and spend as much time as possible alone. Ki ched halashon al kulo. What's worse than Lashon Hara? Nothing. What do you need in order to speak Lashon Hara? Audience. You need an audience. Well, I don't have to spend any time telling you the worst Avera is Lashon Hara. Kol amal adam lafiyu amru chachaminu shekol mitzvosu v'tarosu shel adam eino maspik l'mashemotzi mipi. In other words, we are imbued with a very special capacity as human beings, which is our koach hadibur. And the way that our koach hadibur is corrupted is by way of lashon hara, speaking terribly, speaking foolish things, speaking things that are a waste of time. There's nothing worse than that. It's the greatest of sins. It is the greatest abuse of the greatest human gift. I'll call Dibor Hevel Tzarech Leskalami Sofa Olam V'ad Sofa. And he goes on, more psukim from Koheles. Second paragraph in the left column. Al-Kain. Kol Kvoda Bas Melech Pnima. My little notes are photocopied for you on the side, right? That's how quickly I made this for you. What's the reference here? What does Kvoda Bas Melech Pnima refer to? Who's he referring to? Her. right? Meaning the queen should stay home, right? But it's amazing. The kosher tzarichla, but you can't stay home, right? I mean, you got to shop and you got to go to the store and you what?
Run the store.
You got to run the business. So the kosher tzarichla ticha hakol ayidei shliach. That's an order takeout, right? You don't have to go out. What? Exactly. I'm saying Uber Eats, just stay home. And maybe you're going to tell me, yeah, so you can have everything shipped to the house, but then you need twice as much money because you got to pay for delivery, right? This is not me. This is the language of the Gra. There's no laughing. Hayad Hashem Tiktor. So, okay, it is what it is. Hashem Yisbarach Zan Mikarnei Re'emim. Meaning we in our family believe that Hashem gives us everything that we need. So if the best thing for you is to stay home, and staying home is expensive, it's worth the cost. Ubishabis v'yantiv, theme number two. All the themes are circular, which is one of the reasons I'm suspicious about this essay, because it's a little redundant. Ubishabis v'yantiv, al tadabru klal midvarim she'enem nitzrachim od. Meaning he advocates for Tanis Dibor. On Shabbos, you shouldn't be talking about anything unless it's absolutely necessary for Shabbos. And even things you really need to say on Shabbos. Tiktru ma'od ki kedusha Shabbos gedol ma'od. Try and like get it down to be as succinct as possible. This is his lifestyle. Ubekoshi atiru lomar shalom b'Shabbos. Yushami says you really shouldn't even be saying shalom to people. You should really try and rein it in. Rabbi Dibrecha kama hechmiru. Then he says, v'tzechabit esa Shabbos ma'od kasher hayal lefanai. What does that mean, kasher hayal lefanai? Meaning? When I was home, so we always spend money. Shabbos was beautiful. So now I'm not there, and the finances are uncertain, and the business, and everything is different. You should continue to make a beautiful Shabbos like we always had. The al titzamtim klal he komes onosav shal adam kisubim chutz mishabbosos v'yamim tovim, where everything is determined on Rosh Hashanah for the entire year, except Shabbos and Yantiv. So number one, he says you're going to have to spend a lot of money to get things delivered. And number two, you shouldn't say anything, shouldn't talk anything, try not to associate with people. And then number three, don't skimp on Shabbos. You got to parent the kids because I'm not there. And I'm not interested in the kids, you know, cursing and swearing and getting into machlokas racha kol b'shalom. This is not the image of the Vilna Gaon that we had until this point. Let me read a little bit. I want to get through and then I'll take the questions. Just process it as we go through it. Okay? Everybody should be nice to each other. They should be compassionate to each other. They should be peaceful. Elliot, this is the point I was waiting to answer to your question. There's lots of stuff in English, right? Meaning even for the members of the family who can't read Lashon HaKodesh, there's plenty of good Musar Svarim, Yikru Utamid, the Kol Shekein B'Shabbos Kodesh Kadashim, Lo Yisasku El B'Sifrei Musar, V'Hinei Tadrichem Tamid B'Sifrei Musar. Teach the kids that they should act in a certain way, give them Sifrei Musar. If they can read in Hebrew, they read in Hebrew. If the younger kids can only read in Yiddish, whatever they spoke, so they'll read it in those languages. Let's focus on Musar. And then he says, V'Al Klala U'Shvua V'Chazav U'Machlokas. What's that? I don't know the date. He doesn't mention it. Now, this is debated. Rav Dessler has an essay about this. That Vilna Gaon saying that if the kids need to be hit, the kids should be hit. Don't be merciful. Meaning discipline is absolutely essential. Why? See, it's interesting because when they talk about did the Vilna Gaon enforce, what kind of discipline did he enforce? And Rav Dessler has this whole essay, but what's his real concern? The kids are just kids, but who's responsible for it? The adults. I'm off in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to pick up all the averos for my kids' conduct, and the mother too, right? We're responsible as parents to inspire our kids in the right way. Lashon Hara, etc. Next paragraph. V'ikra hakol shelo yetzu chas v'shalom mipesach beisam v'lachutz. The worst thing is to let them go outside. V'yatu ozen l'dvarecha v'shiyatu v'yichavdu oscha uli'imi. Right? Let's try and make sure that they stay home, that they're nice to you and to my mother. Ulakol ha'gedolim b'shana mehem, and everybody who's their senior, v'gam kol shekasa b'sifrei Moser yakaimu, whatever the svarim say, that's how they should conduct themselves. Gam levanecha sheyichyu, shetigadvo osam b'derech hayashar b'nachas, v'tishalim schar limad, v'tachzik melameid b'beischa. Like Dr. Konigsberg talked about this in ancient Ashkenaz, in her talks when she was here for Shabbos. So you have to hire a Malami. Now, how much learning did he do with the kids until this point? I don't know. But either way, he's not around. Below Titzam Sein Bischaro. And don't be cheap in hiring the best teacher you can. He called me Zonosar Shaladam, Ksuvano Mirosh Hashanah. Chutzmitish, right? By the way, I left a lot of good books behind that they can use. Uluman Hashem Tadrichim Betovu Benachas, Vigam Tashkiach, Albriyasam, Umizonosam Tamid. Make sure that the kids are healthy and well fed. Shalo yechzar lahem. V'sheyomedu mikodem kol ha-chumish. First things first, says the Gra. The kids should know chumish first. Sheyiyu regilim kimat bal peh. I think it's very interesting. The assumption is that the kids in the house need to be fluent in chumish before anything else. V'al yachbid hamalamed olo aleim kim benachas. Right? Even though he says to his wife, you have to heavy-handedly discipline the kids, not the teacher. The teacher is supposed to be nice. So I think at this stage he has married children and little children at home. I think that's the span. So he definitely has teenagers and younger, and he has some married kids. So I assume they're probably in the 18 to 20 range. Ki alimad eno nikba ba'adam ki em b'yishu v'nachas, v'tivzer lehem ezer prutos, v'tiyotze kidei l'samchem v'yoel l'limudam. So as much as he seems cold-hearted, he says you should get a nice teacher who's a nice guy, and they should have a little bit of incentive and give them some money when they do things the right way. So they should be happy about how they're doing. Okay, skip down to the middle of the column. V'amru chachamenu. Take from this what you will. V'amru chachamenu. Our chachamim say, Tana debe Eliyahu, Ein lecha isha kishera benashim, ela kisha osa ritzon ba'ala. Okay, the most righteous of women are the ones who listen to their husbands. V'kol shekein. I'm very fascinated by this line, as I'm sure you are as well. Not only should you listen to me because I am your husband, you should also listen to me because I am right. Those are two clauses that no husband I know has ever put together. And I have every confidence, he says, that you're going to do what I'm writing. Meaning, I knew you were going to do it because you're a great lady and you're a great mom and you're a great wife. It's here on paper, no excuses. And then, well, when you're done before lunch, the family sits down and they read. I hope we're not making too much fun of the letter. So we'll get together, the family get together for lunch, we'll review Abba's letter, and it will inspire us to remember that this is a holy Shabbos meal, that we should be careful about what we say, we should be careful about what we're talking about, because it is Shabbos Kodesh. Quick question, I want to keep going. Oh, okay, good. Thank you. Uvakasha lekulchem al hanichtav leil shetadrich banecha v'nosecha v'ikar b'dvarim rachim v'dirim musar misyashina ha'alev. So you should focus on guiding the children through words of musar that are compelling, right? We're trying to give the kids something that will get them to be the right kind of children that we want them to be. And then he says, look at this line. I underlined it for you. Uvbeprat im nizke lavo le'eretz Yisrael. So this is doubly meaningful for us, right? Because what did I say about the context of the letter? Does the Vilna Gaon intend to reunite with his family? Only, that's not true. He certainly intends to reunite with his family when they meet him in Israel. He's not planning on coming back. He's planning on eventually Mashiach coming, or eventually the family raising enough funds and meeting him there. And what does he want? What did we say about the Gra before? Morgan Stern's point, I think, is correct. When his kids make Aliyah, he doesn't want them to learn Torah and mitzvot when they get there. He wants them to come to Eretz Yisrael perfected. He wants them to come to Eretz Yisrael with good midos. He wants them to arrive where the stakes are so much higher than they are in Chutz Laaretz. That's the kind of kids he wants them to be. V'lachein targilam ki adibar v'amidot tzarech hergal ha'lev v'ha'hergal kol davar shoto naset teva. I mean, there is a lot of muster in here, right? The kids are young and they're impressionable and you have to start them off on the right foot. If you can raise them with good midos in Vilna when they arrive in Eretz Yisrael, b'mehir av yameinu, so they will arrive with good midos. V'chos chalos kashos v'achar kach v'ozal lo az yahaleel. V'imchas v'shalom kyokulu ma'aseim ta ki hareshe yodea ba'atzmo she'ra umar darko ach she'kashalo lifrosh misichluso. If we fail, they're going to know that they're bad kids and they're just going to have a hard time stopping. V'zeh kol ha'adam lo yaniach bo l'cheftzo u'b'mesek v'rest in ijav livlom ad yom moso tzarech ha'adam l'his yaser v'lo b'tanisim v'sigufim rak b'rest in piv u'b'tavo sav v'zehu atshuva. Now, there's a wonderful teacher in the Gush whose name is Rav Yakim Kronblein. Kronblein, thank you. He has a series of wonderful lectures about the Vilna Gaon. And he points out that one of the Vilna Gaon in other places as well, Vilna Gaon believes in a certain amount of self-sacrifice in terms of your relationship with Hashem, but does not believe in what Hasidei Ashkenaz believe, that people should physically hurt themselves in order to either achieve tshuva on Erev Yom Kippur or to reach a higher madriga. He thinks like the ultimate human discipline is not getting distracted by money and gashmias, not overeating, not oversleeping, pushing yourself to be your best self. That's the kind of sacrifice a human being is supposed to make. This is one of the places where the Gra mentions it. I should have underlined it for you. You're not supposed to fast. You're not supposed to beat yourself up. You're supposed to perfect your midos. That's the tshuva. V'zeh kol priya olam haba k'mo shekasav kiner mitzvah. More important than all the fast days and all of the malchus you give yourself is perfecting your character. Every second a person is able to close their mouth and not say something foolish that they should not have said. The ultimate madrega a person reaches is by self-restraint, and in particular in the realm of Dibor. Okay, 100%. Okay, there's two nuschos here. There's nusach Aram Tzoba, which we're not seeing. So on the bottom left, where I underline, the Iker Hageder Bibididus. So now remember, he kept saying, like, don't go out, have the food sent in, things like that. What's he talking about? So he says, what I really mean here, the Geder Bididus, Shalo Teitze Chas V'Shalom Mipesach Beisach Achuta. God forbid you should ever leave our property. The af, Marty's been waiting weeks for me to read this in public. The af bebeis hakneses, tiktsar me'od v'teitze. Even when it comes to shul, get in and get out. V'yosir tov lehispalo bebayis. I personally recommend davening at home. Ki bebeis hakneses, ef shirli hi natzel mikina v'lishmoa dvarim b'telim v'lashon hara. It is impossible to go to shul, he says, and save oneself from jealousy, dvarim b'talim, and lashon hara. It's not me. It's not our shul. It's the Beis HaKnesses of Vilna on the cover of your handout. Nothing has changed. 250 years. We're still reading this letter. Nothing's changed. I didn't say anything. Doesn't matter. Yoser tov shalo tispalel klal. Which I think means, right, the more people come to shul, the less you should be there. So you want to come to plag on Sunday with the 11 other people? That's fine. The rest of, I meant to say mincha gedola, no offense to the plag people. Otherwise, stay home. Thank you. V'tishmor. He didn't have... There was no Kiddush club at the Vilna Gaon Shul. You guarantee that. V'tishmor, underlined section. Shalo teleich lebeis hakvaros klal v'klal. No going to the cemetery. Hisham mistapkim haklipos ma'od. V'kol shekein b'nashim. He says, bad for men to go to the cemetery. It's even worse for women. That's a really interesting discussion for another time. The kol atzaros ve'onos ba'im mizeh. Everybody wonders why things are so bad. They spent too much time at the Beis HaKfaros. Right. He's talking about the spiritual consequence of being in the Beis HaKfaros. What that means in practice, men, and when he doesn't think the men should be there either. But I don't think so. You have to imagine that going to the kever of the Vilna Gaon is an ironic place to be. Okay? V'gam b'tach yoser tov, shelo teilech lebeis ha-knesses shel nashim. Now remember, there are bate knesses where the men and women both gather. There are places where the women went to daven. He said, right, it's not what he did, but that, don't go there. Kisham roe begadim tovim umiskanos. You go to shul, you see what everybody else is wearing. You think things were different in Vilna, and you come back home and you talk about it. But nothing worse than going to shul on Shabbos and spending your Shabbos meal talking about what other people were wearing. Stay home. Etc., etc., more psukim to back the whole thing up. Ulaman Hashem shetifrosh eshachumish kasher tzivisicha v'altifchos kasher izarticha ki v'pachos mizeh ovrim kol rega alkam alavin v'asin v'shakol ko'ov de'avodazara. If we're not careful and we're not disciplined and we're not halachically minded and literate, we're going to spend all of our time sinning without even knowing it. Avol ha'ikar lizkos la'olam haba v'shmiras pib. You want to get into Olam Haba? Watch what you say. V'zehu yoser mikol ha-torah v'amaisim. V'elu nikru nashim sha'ananos ki'apehu kodesh kadashim. It's very fascinating. If I were to ask you, what would be the most important mitzvah that the Vilna Gaon would emphasize to his family in his absence? And he says over and over and over again, the worst aveira a person can do is lashon hara. It's really fascinating. It helps us understand his reclusiveness to a certain extent. And this is, again, there's so many favorites here. It's hard to pick them out. This is amazing. Ubisvarim Shali, back in my office, in the bookcase. Yesh Mishle im Lashon Ashkenaz. Remember we saw the Siyam before? The big, that was the Shiar Shirim Siyam, right? There's a Mishle in my office, translated. Leman Hashem Sheyikru B'chol Yom. You should read Mishle every day. And then he says, V'hu Yoser Tov Mikol Sefer Musar. The Gam Sefer Koheles Yikru Tamid Lifanecha Kisham Me Mahavil Inyane Olam Hazeh Vishar Svarim. Wife and kids. I think it's wife and kids. It's amazing. So he endorses all of the contemporary Musar literature. By the way, Musar literature is brand new, right? 1778. Musar literature is not what we have today. There's very little of it. He's living in the decades after the Ramchal. I mean, this is the beginnings. This is not even the Musar movement, but he's already talking about Musar as a movement. And he says, they're all good and you should read them and you should follow what they say. But for the record, you could also just read Mishle and Koheles and they have everything in it that you need. Every year we read Koheles and anybody who's paying attention to Koheles thinks to themselves, if this is the only Musar book I have, it's good enough. Yeah. It's very possible. Okay, top left of the last column of page 7. Okay, v'gam es chasani ani masir b'chol zeh sheyikra lifneim kanal. Chasani is the son-in-law because he's got a married daughter. V'shehei mudo l'shem shamayim. So first of all, this doesn't only apply to my kids; it applies to my son-in-law as well. And everything he does should be l'shem shamayim. L'man Hashem yichanicha. Not that we know of. I assume they're pretty good guys, but you know. Don't say the kids don't need this. I'm being too demanding. So you really got to learn Torah and you got to learn it the right way. You and the little boys, everybody. V'talma, V'tilma Meseches Avos, U'beprat, B'pirkei Avos, Rabbi Nasan, Umesechas derech eretz, ki derech eretz kadma l'Torah. So he says, I want you to learn Pirkei Avos, and I want you to learn Avos Rabbi Nasan, and I want you to learn Mesechas derech eretz, meaning all of the Mishnayos and all of the Brisos that come along with it that are in that field. V'tichabe l'chamoscha u'l'chamosecha hazakena tichbad ma'od. Be nice to your mother-in-law, that's my wife, and be nice to my mom, who is your grandmother-in-law. Everybody else, you should be nice to too. Ohavasi imi, to my dear mom. Yadati she'incha tzricha l'moser shali. You don't need my moser. Ki yadati ki tznua'a. Af al pikein yikru'u lefanecho ha'igeres hazos ki heim divrei elokim chaim. I think you should read it too. Umevakesh ani me'od mimcha mimech bevakasha. Don't worry about me, mom. I promise you I'll be fine. If I make it to Jerusalem, like I say I will, I'll daven for you, like I promised I would, at Har Habayis, at the Shar HaShamayim. And if Hashem has it his way, not only will I daven for you in Yerushalayim, but we will be reunited there. He says to his wife, you have to honor your mother-in-law. That's what the Torah says. Because she's an almana, my father is dead. So you can't insult her in any such way. Meaning you guys got to stick together. Mom, I need you to help my wife while I'm gone. He's a mitzvah gedola l'chol adam b'shol and adam b'shas adin. Like the Medrash says, like the Chazal say, that they'll be asked at the end of days if you were nice to other people. If there's a problem, you should forgive each other. Everything should be done for Hashem in purpose. Mom, you should also help out with raising the kids, and you should do it in a nice fashion. And to the kids, you have to respect your grandmother. No fighting in the house. I daven for my family, for my children-in-law, for all of Israel, life and peace. Minai ahuvam, from me who loves them, Eliyahu ben Rav Shlomo Zalman. So it is an incredibly loaded document. The historical context, I think, is important because understanding the Vilna Gaon's journey is incredibly important. But for all that we have met him as this kind of extreme figure, there are dimensions of his extremism that are very present. And then there's also a lot more here in terms of his love for his family. And I would say the recognition within this text that he is sacrificing a lot in terms of his scholarship and in terms of his family to make this journey. How ironic it is that he makes so much sacrifice, but the journey is not successful. Questions? Who had a question? Jay.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking about, well, does he all of a sudden have all this extra time to write such lengthy poetry, mm-hmm. whatever, love letters that he found all of a sudden and he never had before? And I would think this is the kind of stuff you would talk about during your farewell party, but you just like leave him abruptly. And then, like, okay, guys, I still care about you.
So yeah, so it's a great observation. I think the fact that. Right, there's some communication that has happened, and he obviously feels that there's value in setting it down on paper and then formal ritualizing it to a certain extent. But I think you're fundamentally right, and I think the decision to write it later is really interesting. Sharon? That's a very interesting suggestion, that he wants to double down on some of his ideas. Like, the more he goes out into the world, the more it confirms his suspicions. A great observation. Yeah. It is quoted. This is not like a hard to find letter.
I'm saying that I think the emphasis on Chara and speech would be straight
on
like next in line.
It's very possible that he does. I don't know. I that's more of an observation than a question. I'm saying I would expect to find it also. I would think this is a very important primary source. So I think we could summarize by saying, after reading this letter, I don't expect to see you in shul on Shabbos. Certainly Marty, who has read this letter multiple times and will be framing it in his home, will not be with us, which will be a tragedy. But I think that it does really two things at the same time. All great figures in history are complex figures in history. So the complexity should be shining through. There's more to this figure than the great legend of who he was. There was a human being within this story, and there was a family that was definitely impacted by his incredible life. This letter, I think it's worth pointing out, whether Professor Morgenstern is right or wrong, this letter is a very funny byproduct of a very bold decision in his life. For whatever reason, the Vilna Gaon decided to go to Israel. He says he's sacrificing a lot to do it. Morgenstern says, for a guy who cares so much about learning 22 hours a day, why is he traveling across Europe? So he's willing to do it because he thinks it's worth it, right?
This letter really shows
him. I think it does show to a certain extent that he's human, but he is elite. And he is reclusive. Those things are still very present, meaning the end of the day, he leaves and tells his family, I don't recommend traveling outside the home, and I don't recommend talking to other people, which is absolutely true. But he takes these bold moves, and that's my point, which is, it's amazing. Had the Vilna Gaon not decided to make Aliyah, we probably would not have anything close to this kind of intimate portrait of his relationship to his wife, his understanding of Mussar, his value of Jewish education, his expectations of the way his family conducted himself, and now that we do. So it's important to remember that this is part of a very complex Aliyah. It's very important to remember that this is a letter that he wrote while going to Israel, while never making it to Israel. But to a certain extent, I think the letter kind of stands for itself. So it's important to balance the two of them and to appreciate all the depth of it. It is certainly one of the prized possessions in terms of the memory of the Vilna Gaon that we have. We don't?